White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 529.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com ever-growing family, and we're so grateful. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are here again. I'm having speaking problems tonight, but I think our technical issues maybe a thing of the past. I think we've got it now. Knock on wood. Knock on every bit of wood you've got. I think that we are to the point now that everything is working the way it's supposed to work. And that would be very, very good. That would be very welcome.
That you saying that is like the, you know, the red shirt guys walking in the jungle. What could happen?
Ooh, wah! Next thing you know, the computer explodes. Yeah. I think we've got everything going again. It just, what happens is every time Windows updates a big update, it resets all the audio defaults. And then I have to go back in, but I'd written them down last time. And I finally found the little diagram I made of how to do everything. And between that set it back, but also, hopefully our show should sound a lot better going forward now, because we've always kind of, the last couple of years, we've had a choice between using StreamYard or using Zoom. And Jared and his bunch use StreamYard and have for a long time, but they do a lot of, you know, video, audio, both. They're kind of like always doing that. And that worked for them. But for the longest time, I felt like the audio quality was better on Zoom. But the audio quality on Zoom has gotten so bad now, and I feel like StreamYard actually has gotten better, that we have moved completely to StreamYard now. So shout out to StreamYard. You guys are providing a superior product for us to make the listeners' experience better listening to the show. So hopefully no more lags and dropouts and weird little speed up and slow down. I think we've solved all of that. So cross your fingers, knock on wood, everything will go well. So,
amen to that.
Amen to that. So that being said, how are you doing, and what's going on your neck of the, in your neck of the woods up there?
It's spring, you know, a lot going on, and trying to enjoy some of the beautiful weather occasionally when I can get outside, doing a bunch of yard work on the weekend, and trying to watch a little bit of the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
The schedule, can I just vent about this for a minute? Like, I love the traditional NCAA tournament schedule. It's been the same forever, and this year, because of the bubble and all that, they revised it. Instead of having the, you know, the Sweet 16 Thursday and Friday and the Elite Eight Saturday and Sunday with the games at very watchable times, The Elite Eight is now Monday and Tuesday. And the second game of the Elite Eight starts at 10 Eastern both days. Okay. So like UCLA Michigan is 10 Eastern tomorrow. Arkansas Baylor is 10 Eastern tonight. It starts about the time we will finish this podcast.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I remember at least to turn it on and fall asleep on it. Who's playing now? I don't even know.
I could have told you before you asked me that.
I forgot. So, I honestly forgot it was today. You're exactly right. Yes. I forgot that it was even going on.
Yeah. So and then the Final Four will be Saturday or whatever. So I just, you know, it's frustrating. As an East Coast person, there's a 0% chance I'm going to watch them in either one of those games.
It's Houston, number 2 seed, Houston, number 12, Oregon State. I tell you one thing, yes, I do like about this Elite Eight. We've got a 12, a 6, and an 11 that are still left. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
A 12, yeah, and they're both, and all three of those are Pac-12 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got three number ones. Yeah, you got three Pac-12 high seeds, three number ones, Arkansas and Houston. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The number twos didn't do so well this time, just Houston. And they barely squeaked out. They barely escaped. Okay. I remember. So, yeah, 8:57 p.m. my time. That's way too late. Certainly too late for you. Good Lord. Good gosh. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the tournament in a minute. Let me see what all we have. Flipping between multiple windows here. Well, I guess we'll start out. We've had a little bit of spring practice in the football program going on, and that's what we're mostly here usually to talk about. So, you and I were planning on talking about what players are impressing. Has anybody jumped out? But I want to know if you've gotten any impression from the coaches now that they're actually out coaching and being seen coaching and then talking to the media and everything. What's your thoughts?
I mean, I think we have a little better sense of them as people. I mean, I think the staff is very organized. Like, they have a lot of experience. I think they have, they're very hands-on and active. I think they're not trying to divide kind of the offensive defense and be like, I'm just over here with this group or you're over there with that group. There's a lot of times when both units are on the same field. And so, like, Harsin can literally run one piece to the other and work with offensive guys and watch the defensive guys that work with them. And they can be very – attentive and hands-on with the whole team. And I think that's probably a good thing before the offense was kind of Gus's thing and the defense was getting steals thing. And so this is a different way of thinking about it. The openness of, more interviews, more the open practice we talked about. They're on a break right now, and then they're going to come back and do some more practices and scrimmage next week. That's different. I don't know if that'll continue, but I think that's very much a smart move at this point because they're still just doing basic installation and getting to know everybody and what they can do, what they can't do. But I think I have a favorable impression of how things are working and the way they're interacting with the players and, kind of what their thinking is at this point. But, the proof is in the pudding and all of these things. And we'll know a lot more seeing them actually coach a game, I think, that we will – what we can learn out of practice and conversation and stuff.
Yeah. I just from seeing like they're meeting the press in addition to being on the field, I thought that, I enjoyed some of the remarks, from our new defensive coordinator. He was very, animated in his excitement about having, these players, at his disposal. I guess several years at Vanderbilt will make a real Power Five roster look pretty darn good. It's like spending a decade, eating gluten free pizza like I have to eat, and then getting an actual, really nice pizza. You're like, whoa! I forgot what it was like to have these actual ingredients, And so he seemed very very excited about that. And I liked. By the way, I've been hearing like some of the players saying that these coaching staff is just very different and that they're really excited. They're like, they'd never experienced anything like this, the way that they're interacting with them, which sounds cool. And then the other thing I heard this week that I thought was interesting was that some Auburn fans were kind of bent out of shape by the first half of this, but they kind of overlooked the second half. And I want to get your thoughts on it for whatever you might think it's worth, which you probably don't think it's worth very much, but apparently Paul Finebaum said that Harsin doesn't like bowl you over with the big charisma of some coaches. And that's kind of where a lot of Auburn fans kind of drew the line and said, here goes Finebaum crapping on Auburn. But then he followed that with, but he has a quiet sort of confidence and, I forget the word he used, like a warmth or something, but he had a very positive thing to say about him, that he was very personable, not in a knock you over kind of way, like a Steve Spurrier or something, but more like just a kind of a good guy that you enjoy talking to. So I thought that was a very interesting perspective. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, Harsin's not here trying to win the press conference.
Right.
And I think he gives less crud about his perception on Twitter than anybody alive, probably. So he does not care about that. And so I think the other piece of it is he's trying to project an image of who he is and who he wants people to perceive him to be for recruits. That's what a lot of it's about. And I think the perception there – putting out there is kind of hard work, organized, meticulous, hands-on, really engaged with the players, and really kind of trying to connect with everybody on the team.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. I find it very promising. I do like that a lot. What about the players? Has there been anything the last few days since our last show that has like either caught your attention or the coaches have mentioned them or anything like that? I haven't heard a whole lot along those lines other than just continued praise for the players we already knew were kind of the exceptional ones. So what have you heard, if anything?
I mean, in terms of players that were kind of lesser known players or hadn't got a lot of chances to play who had really stepped up and shown so far. I mean, the bad news piece, it was one of these guys was Jeremiah Wright. He's a second year defensive lineman from South Alabama. And I think the physically largest defensive tackle on the team. And he was recruited as both an offensive and defensive lineman. And then the hope was he could play offensive tackle, but then he got shifted to defensive line last year and he played a little bit, but he really stepped up in the spring with this new staff and after going through the offseason program. And there, he was kind of splitting first-team stuff with Truesdale. And so the feeling was he could be a real contributor there. He tore his ACL. So that's the one serious injury that's happened. There's been some other minor nicks and players missing and stuff, but that's the one, the big one that I think is good. But, I think this team has a lot of talent and a lot of depth at a few positions, defensive line and cornerback, I think are the two spots where we have the most depth and the most talent. And so it's overcomable. I mean, again, like guys like Lee Hunter and Jay Hardy, who are big time recruits the last 2 years, are running like fourth team defensive tackle. So, that's how much talent I think we have at that spot. So it's not the end of civilization, but it's not a good thing. In terms of other guys, I think the one wide receiver who's gotten a lot of attention and been written about a lot and talked about a lot is Javaris Johnson. He's a guy we recruited a couple years ago. He's a very small, shifty guy, and he was recruited to be Ryan Davis. That's who he's supposed to be. And so a little slot receiver who's a possession guy who can catch the ball and get 5 yards and get open in space. That's who he is. And they've been using him a ton. He's been getting a ton of passes thrown to him and getting a lot of attention in this spring practice. So I think that's a guy on the offensive side. I mean, I think the other thing I just think is, I think this team has a lot of talent and experience on defense. I mean, I think defensive line, we got a lot of solid, productive players. Linebackers, those two linebackers that played a ton last year are going to be really good again, and they're not going to play them 90% of the snaps like we did last year because we're not going to have to. And then I think at cornerback in particular, we have a ton of talent, and they've kind of shifted guys around. I mean, Tennyson, that looked like Tennyson played nickel in the bowl game, and they moved him to safety, and I could see him being like a really good kind of free safety kind of player. And then they moved one of the quarterbacks, Pritchett, I think, to nickel. And I think it's when you have a bunch of cornerbacks, when you can put a really athletic, bigger corner at nickel, that's a strong move. And we've got, a couple of very experienced, talented cornerbacks who are going to not even start. We got, the JUCO guy recruited last year and the one, Domio, and the one we brought in this year named, Haddon or Holden or whatever. They're both going to be backups. And I think that's a solid place to be at corner. So I think, that's a position where we have a lot of depth and talent, and we're going to need it. But I'm excited about, the versatility and kind of the things that Mason could do on defense and kind of fooling the other team by moving guys around. And, is this guy rushing? Is he covering? Is he, what's he doing? And having some kind of versatile players that they can do all those kind of different things.
And I've also been hearing that our favorite fullback H-back / battleship has been getting a lot of work, that they're trying to find a lot of different ways to use J.J.
Pegues.
Thank you. I'm never going
to. I'm just here to say his name for you. It's the only reason I'm on the show.
I'm here to say Lord Tennyson.
Oh, for a muse of fire.
Lord Tennyson. But
it is, ladies and gentlemen. The soundboard is back.
It is back with a vengeance. That is right. So how do you think they're going to use J.J.? They standard fullback? Or are they going to put him out like at tight end or in the slot or run him like, you know, I guess a H-back kind of is those things, isn't he? And is this offense even an offense that uses that position? You know, I know that they've talked about using the fullback more, but I mean, is this going to be an offense when you hybrid together Harsin and Bobo's playbooks? Is it going to produce an offense where JJP's position, whatever it is, you know, on the table a lot, able to be used a lot? That's what I'm wondering, because we don't know a lot about this offense yet. It's kind of a hybrid.
Yeah, but I think part of their whole thing is, you know, they're going to take advantage of the players they have that can make plays, right? And it's not so, just Pegues is a fan favorite because he's a big guy, but also because he was exciting and it was fun when he was in. And I think they get that too. So I think he's also a guy who's a big athletic guy at tight end. And they can play in the fullback. I definitely think there's going to be some kind of I formation stuff where they put him at fullback or front of tank in like in a goal line situation. Come on. I love that. You put two more tight ends and put Pegues in the backfield in front of him, and I'll take that.
And then you flare him out and throw him the ball, and who wants to go out there and tackle him in the flat? On the 1 yard line, you throw him the ball out on the flare route. Who's going to stop him when he turns, he squares his shoulders up and heads and takes that one and plants that foot? Who do you have? It's going to stop that young man. I just don't even know. You know what they're going to say? You know what they're going to say?
When? What are they going to say?
When JJ catches the ball.
Whose funeral is it? Yours.
That's what they're going to say, John. Whose funeral is it? Yours. Ugh. That's right. That is right. Any other players of note? I guess our kicker's doing real well, right? And Anders is still kicking well.
A lot of special teams work, and nothing exciting really there, other than probably these different players or returns. But Anders, I think is solid and is going to come back and have a solid year for us. I think the other thing, I think the coaches understand what they have in Tank Bigsby, and they know that the offense is going to be built around him and making him successful. And that they need to keep him healthy and not run him into the ground, and that he's the bell cow. He's the focus, and that the passing game can, you know, he can set up the passing game and complement it. And they can run play action off him and stuff, but that they will get as far as they could be successful in using him and maximizing his potential.
Well, I'm just thinking Pat Dye's first season, 5-6, Terry Bowden's first season, 11-0. Tommy Tuberville's first season, 5-6. Gene Chizik's first season was like 8-5, probably something like that. Gus Malzahn's first season, 12-2, I believe. So there's precedent both ways. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's precedent for a coach to come in. The cabinet, the cupboard is fairly well stocked. Gets people fired up. Gets them motivated again after maybe they've lost a little bit of their enthusiasm, you know, kind of cracks down on a little bit. But there's also been times when the coaches come in and was a good coach, but had to build things up. The cupboard was kind of bare. I feel like the cupboard is fairly well stocked right now.
Yes. Other than the places we knew it was an issue, like offensive line, offensive tackle. I think that's the one position where we haven't heard a bunch of new and different stuff. Guys have gotten older, they got a different coach, you know, but I think at that position, you know, I don't know how much different the story is right now. So I think other than that, you're 100%.
Well, we knew that, you know, other than offensive line, honestly, recruiting wasn't something we were that mad at Gus about. Other than offensive line, we were never really that mad at Gus about recruiting. It was what he did with them or didn't do with them, right? So you got to feel like the potential is there to have a pretty decent season. And I remember I heard somebody in the media this week saying that really expectations are going to be so low this year. And I don't know who sets those expectations or why they would be low. That if Harsin can go out there and chalk up like an 8-5 year or something, maybe just win the bowl game, you know, win one of those games that we struggle. If he were to beat Georgia and win a bowl game, man, would he have some goodwill, would he not?
Truth. And, yes, absolutely.
And here's a question for you. Here's a question for you. So one of the national podcasts, and I'm not usually big on national podcasts because I really don't want to spend an hour of my life hearing what's going on at UCLA and what's going on at Oklahoma and what's going on at Boston College. I don't care. I don't care. I got other things I could listen to. And so I listen to Auburn stuff occasionally. I listen to, you know, other podcasts. I don't really listen to the big national ones. But I was listening to one of the national ones, very well-known national ones. And they were doing the top 25 coaches. And they had three different national media figures. And none of them mentioned Harsin. Now, you might say, well, you know, it's his first year at Auburn. Why would they mention him? Well, he was like, what, the third highest winning percentage in Division I at a school, Boise State, that is has a good reputation. It's not Louisiana Monroe. I mean, Boise State is a, you know, they've been on the radar for 20 years. So why was Harsin, with his record, he's had double-digit wins in every season but one that they played more than like seven. They only played like seven games last year, so last year doesn't even count. But in the other six, it's like he was coached there for like 7 years, and in six of those years he had double-digit wins and won multiple bowl games. And I'm just like, why is he not even considered for anybody's top 25 coaches list when you got guys on that list that are like the retreads of the retreads of the retreads? What do you think about that?
I get it. And I wonder if he was still at Boise if he'd have been on that list.
That was my question to them.
The cynical part of me thinks that.
Yes.
But I, you know, the other piece of it is if he goes out and has a good year, then when they do this a year from now, he'll be on the list. So I think he's got to go prove it.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a whole lot of coaches that were on that list that if they were coaching at Auburn, would not, after a couple of years, would not be on that list. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think there's a very much a kind of a what's the hot new flavor kind of thing in a lot of those things. So I guess part of it.
It's just there were a lot of coaches there that I'm thinking if they're on the top 25 coaches list and he's not, then that means – in their opinion, we should have hired anybody on their list before we hired him. And I don't agree with that.
That's fair.
I mean, like, you know, they had people that you're just like, you know, when you get down, and you get down to like number 23, 24, 25 on those lists, these are people you do not want, you know, at Auburn, really. I just was wondering. I know that you probably have even less regard for that kind of thing than I do, but sometimes it bugs me and I just wonder their logic. So, all right. Yeah.
I get it. I would say the other piece is that, you know, they have different reasons for their perceptions than we see sometimes.
That's right. Well, you want to talk about basketball for a minute?
Sure.
So we've got Led Zeppelin coming in, which is exciting. excited about having him at point guard. I mean, we still don't know anything about, I mean, we still don't really know who's leaving, do we?
No. The NBA final deadline is not passed yet. Do you want the worst case scenario?
Thor goes to
Thor and
Sharif
and small forward
Franklin.
No,
one of them isn't
even the guy who played point guard when Sharif was out.
Oh well, we've already said goodbye to Johnson, right?
Jamal Johnson's gone.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other forward, isn't it Franklin, I'm thinking? And then...
No, Alan Flanagan is who I'm thinking about.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard anything about him.
I mean, I think he, you know, at one point, you know, Pearl or one of them said that the up to four players are testing the NBA waters just to get an evaluation.
Yeah.
And if I had to bet money, again, because it's Sharif Cooper, Thor... Alan Flanagan and Jalen Williams are probably those four players.
Okay.
So I don't think Jalen Williams is going to go pro. I think he's going to come back.
I can't imagine.
But again, I think in a lot of ways, he was the most valuable player in the team this year, Jalen Williams. He was both offense and defense, rebounding, ball handling, everything. Mm. And Flanagan was incredibly valuable too. He scored, he stepped up and played point guard when he needed him to. He did a lot. And I think Flanagan has improved to the point where he's a, you know, a fringe draft prospect. So I think I'm not saying any of those guys are going to go, but I just wanted to paint the picture that if, you know, if next week, if you hear it's Cooper and one of those guys, that you're not like, oh my gosh, where did this come from?
No, I'm pretty much reconciled that next year's team is going to look a lot different than this year's team, which looks a lot different from last year's team.
Yes.
I felt like all along this year that Flanagan was basically playing the Samir Dowdy role this year, which is when nothing else is working, you get him to score. You know, Dowdy last year was like, if we needed points and nothing else was working, Dowdy could create scoring opportunities. And that's kind of what Flanagan had to be for us a lot of this year, especially with the Justin Powell out. So I've shocked you with my wisdom.
No. I thought the Samir Dowdy analogy was a good one. Like, okay, if everything's broken, give him the ball and get out of the way.
Right. Exactly. The year before that, it was Jared Harper.
Yeah.
Different position, but he was the creator, right? He was the guy that could create. Well, I mean, to a certain degree, Bryce. But I'm just saying, we haven't had a Bryce the last 2 years. We've had somebody that could put the ball in their hands and create their own offense when nothing else is working, and that's been Samir Dowdy last year, and Alan Flanagan this year, pretty much. So let's go down the list real quick. All right. So we're thinking Sharif Cooper probably gone. We're thinking JT Thor may be gone. We're thinking, who was the one you just said that was your MVP?
Jalen Williams.
Jalen Williams, maybe, don't know. We're thinking Jamal Johnson, gone. The other forward, Franklin or whoever it is, gone. He's transferred.
No.
One of the big dudes.
Javon Franklin transferred.
Yeah, I said Franklin. That's what
I said. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
And then... was there one? There's another one, right? Oh, Flanagan. Yeah, that's up to six players. Oh, plus Powell, seven.
Yeah,
seven.
But again, I don't. I think a lot of those guys are. I think Jamal Johnson, Javon Franklin have transferred along with Powell. I think Sharif's going to go pro. I suspect the others will be back. I mean, I think Thor, Jalen Williams, and Flanagan will probably be back.
But we could lose as many as seven players off this team, and that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But that's the new normal. We didn't used to be a program that could happen.
That's true.
We used to be a program where we're like, oh, we have a player that might go to the NBA. when he's finished his 4 years, he might get a chance in the NBA. Now it's like, man, we're about to lose seven players potentially. That's just unbelievable to me. I'm not saying it's horrible. I mean, it's good in a way and it's disappointing in a way, but it's just the very fact that it is just unbelievable to me. So, you say we're looking for another transfer guard. What kind of guard?
I mean, I think, you know, the point guard we brought in, Zepp, is a you know, more of a point guard, but he can play either guard. We have a big freshman shooting guard coming in. Again, he could play either way, but mostly a shooting guard. I think, you know, another shooting guard, you know, wing kind of player that's an outside shooter. I think a guy to replace Powell in that kind of outside shooter, that kind of guy that stands there at the three-point line as we race down in the fast break and is waiting for the open three.
Yeah.
And again, I said last week there's a guy from Penn State out there that is a lot of schools want. He's a bigger guard who's a really good, like 40% from three-point range. And I think if we got him, that guy would be the new, you know, the new Bryce Brown kind of guy that just stands out there and just drains it game after game. So that would be exciting.
I like it. And who is our new point guard he would be teamed up with?
Zepp.
There you go. I got to get me a new sound effect now. I didn't realize that was going to be live. That's why it's like it was supposed to sound. See, one of my problems in life is I have too much Led Zeppelin in my iTunes. It was supposed to sound like this. So, Heartbreaker. I'm start calling him Heartbreaker. He can either, well, I guess we want him to go out there and rock and roll, and for the other team, he can be a Heartbreaker.
Thank you for that.
Heartbreaker. All right. What do you think on the tournament so far, other than the horrible time that's on television?
I enjoyed it. Again, we had one great game last night. Enjoyed every minute of that.
Oh, that was insane. That was like, okay, I'm watching it for a while, and UCLA is out to a nice lead. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I blink my eyes, and Alabama's like doubled them up. And I'm like, whoa, boy, that's not good. And then I go away for a minute. I come back, and it's 40-29 at halftime. And I'm like, what? And then you come out in the second half, and Alabama pulls out ahead. And I'm like, yeah, here we go. And then you see, it was the weirdest game. It was a game of, there was no consistency at all. It was either one team completely dominating or the other team completely dominating. There were like no stretches during that entire game that they were like playing even.
Yes.
That was so, it was always, it's a mismatch, but it switched. I don't think I've ever seen a basketball game where the momentum so completely and utterly switched 100% back and forth with never a 50-50. That was so weird. What did you make of that?
I think it was two very streaky teams and playing in a lot of pressure. And I think, it was a lot of games have runs in them, right?
Yes.
But that game had nothing but runs.
Nothing but runs.
Yeah.
So weird. But it was
fun to see Alabama lose. I enjoyed that part immensely.
My favorite thing, I said this on Twitter, it got quite a lot of attention. I'm like, when they were down like 12 with 25 seconds to go, or even less than 25 seconds to go, everybody knew it was over. There was zero chance that they were going to hit like 5 3-pointers in 19 seconds. That just was not going to happen. And yet they kept fouling and calling timeout and stuff. And all that did was allow the cameras to show more Alabama fans' misery in the stands. And I'm like, I'm so glad that they keep calling timeout and fouling, because it gives us this extended... I said this was Bama misery, the Snyder cut. This was the 4.5-hour version of Alabama fans suffering, as their greatest team ever didn't even make it out of the Sweet 16. It's truly remarkable, by the way. They've had like 10 teams now go to the Sweet 16, and only one of them won in the Sweet 16, and that one lost in the Elite Eight. Yep. We've had a Final Four and two Elite Eights on top of all of our Sweet 16 teams. They've never had but one team get past the Sweet 16. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
And that was 17 years ago. So... otherwise, the tournament.
Other than that immense high point, it's fine. I've enjoyed some good games, some fun games, but I haven't been glued to my seat as much as normal. How about you?
Yeah, no, there have been a few times. I mean, like I said, that Houston game that was really close, I thought they were going to lose. And there have been a handful. I think the main thing I've enjoyed about this tournament is that there have been so many really low seeds. I mean, like in double-digit numbers that have done well. I think this was like the first time ever that you had that many double-digit seeds in the Sweet 16, maybe. And so that was interesting. And also the fact that like the Big Ten just crapped out in the first two rounds, except for Michigan. And the Pac-12 from play-in games, UCLA, have done this well. So, in fact, let's check in on currently.
Houston won.
Oh, yeah. Poor Beavers. Finally, the Beavs met their fate, finally.
Yep.
So, Arkansas and Baylor will be tipping off. Baylor nearly lost.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor was so far down, I said, if they pull this game out, they deserve to win the national championship. And they did.
They're a really good team.
Well, they had a big lull, and it looked like they were going to lose. And then they just reached deep down, and they pulled that sucker out. So, all right. So we know that Houston is in the Final Four, and I'm not sure I had that. Saw that coming. We'll talk about how our brackets came out in a second. The winner of Arkansas-Baylor, probably going to be Baylor. Gonzaga gets to beat up on USC, and do you think the only one that's of question to me is, can UCLA continue the magic and beat number one Michigan?
No, I think they used it all up. UCLA used it all up last night. I think Michigan's a better team.
So we're probably going to see Houston, Baylor, Gonzaga, and Michigan, which means after all the Cinderellas, we're going to have a 1, a 1, a 1, and a 2 unless something unexpected still. And it's still good.
But that, again, I'm okay with that because I think that's going to be really high quality basketball.
Yeah. The best teams. Yeah. That's what you want. You don't want the fluke because, you know, so often you get the Cinderella that plays so well one game and then they wait 2, 3, 4 days and they come out and they're just, they suddenly remember who they are. And that's disappointing because you could have had a good game and instead you get a 30-point blowout when Cinderella suddenly remembers their Cinderella.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, let's see how our brackets are doing. John, I was in sole possession of first place at the end of the first round. Never in my life have I been in sole possession with that many. We had like 35, something like that, entries. And I was in sole possession. I had 250 points. Nobody else had more than 240. I'm like, man, I'm going to win this thing. I am currently in like 19th place. It all went. No, I'm in 21st now. Oh, great. Yeah, it all went to crap. I went from 250 to 490, but our current leader, we have a three-way tie for first with 580 points in the way that ESPN does their brackets. We currently have, one of them has Baylor and two of them have Gonzaga, so there's still a chance that it won't end in a three-way tie. But we have number one.
No, wait, I think you need a refresh. I think the point totals have changed with that game that just ended.
Okay, let's see. Oh, I'm 22nd now. You've moved ahead of me. I know that. You're tied for 17th, and I'm dropped all the way to 22nd. Let's see. Oh yeah, you're right. So we have a sole possession of first place now. My apologies, Stephen Houston, Iona piece of history. I love all the Iona names from the first round. Stephen has 660 points, and he's the one that has Baylor.
Like 99.1% correct. That's, or 99.1%. I think that's the percentile of brackets. Yeah.
Of all brackets. Yes. Yeah. I was at 99 after the first round. Yeah. If you look there where it says R64 and you go down way down there at 22, you'll see, oh, I switched out. Never mind. That's a different one. 210. But I had a 250 bracket. But anyway, so yeah, 200. So, Steven, and then we have a three-way tie for second with UVA double dribbled. I won last time, dang it, and get better at celebrating, which is George Gaston. So, it's a good job with those guys. It's probably going to be one of them that ends up winning it, I'm thinking. But
yeah, and it could come down to those three all have Gonzaga, and Steve Houston has Baylor. So it could come down to that.
Exactly. And Bart Lindsay has Michigan. So if Michigan ends up winning, he could conceivably make a big jump
up there, yeah.
Especially if Baylor and Gonzaga were to lose tomorrow, whenever they're playing.
Yes.
If they don't even make the Final Four and then like Michigan won, yeah, he could do it. And Weagle 87 could too, because he's got Michigan down in 10th place. But that gives you a lot of points. So okay. So that's that. And then also Fantasy Formula One League update very quickly, because I know you either like it or you don't care at all. So let me just quickly say, we've had one race in the books now. We've got like 13 teams participating. And after the first race, just like last year, dominating the field is Mira. And I'm telling you, she picks her team. I don't have anything to do with it. I log her in, give her her account, and she goes in and puts her teams together. And Del Taco Racing, her team, I don't know why she did it, but Mira has Del Taco Racing and Mercedes AMG. She's very smart with those. So she is currently number one and number four, John. She just dominates this thing. Number two is Alan J. Porter, who is our co-host on the Bond shows and the racing shows and on Open Wheel. Number three is Delvin Williams. Way to go, Delvin. You know, he's our occasional co-host and guest and on our network. Mm-hmm. And then my best team, Blue Tiger, and instead of Red Bull, I got Blue Tiger Racing, is number five. And Jared's number six, so good job, Jared. So, so Mira, Alan, Delvin, Mira again, me, and Jared, Alan, Rob, I believe Rob Morgan, Richard Stevens, Rob again, me again, Jared, and Richard. So there you go. There are after one race, but the thing is, we don't get to go again for several weeks because both Formula One and IndyCar are off until mid-April. So we're going to have a long layoff here while Mira basks in her domination. So, in fact, I saw her when I picked her up this afternoon, and I said, oh, do you want to see how the standings are in Fantasy Formula One? And she's like, I'm winning, aren't I? Let me see me winning. And I'm like, yes, actually, you are. And she's like, yep. She just knows. It's hilarious. All right, let's see. We did our best names from our bracket already. So do you want to wait until the very end and then name like our top three or something after the final four?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to do that. We're going to, in addition to crowning our champion picker, we're also going to do do the winners of the best names competition. And we've got some good ones. We went over them last time. Okay. Before we do anything, the next thing up in just a second is Jared's Guess the Game for this week. It's everybody's favorite new segment. It's like a really exciting thing that we do. And we're going to get to that in just 1 second. But we do have at least one or two new patrons. So I got to go down the list and thank everybody. We don't do commercials on here. Instead, we just thank you guys that help keep us on the air. So rather than you having to hear about mattresses or Viagra or any of those kind of crazy things, instead, you get to hear your fellow AU Wishbone family members and listeners who, for as little as a dollar a month, though many do better, more than that, but as little as a dollar a month, are part of the family and keep us going. All you have to do to join the ranks and get on this list and get to do things like the Pick'em for the March Madness or the Fantasy Formula One or whatever else we come up with during the year, all you have to do is go to www.auwishbone.com. www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button to become a patron. Here are the awesome folks who are currently keeping our programs on the air. We have to thank Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, and Christopher Burleson and Samuel Salvatore. Thank you so much. We have to thank Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Trombone Tiger is one of our new ones, Willie Carden is our old reliable, Ann Kanjian, of course, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE, Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, that always makes me laugh, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, and they did last night. Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson is our newest family member. Welcome aboard, Christian. We are so glad to have you. Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, there's Rob, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, I believe is one of our either new members or changed their name, and that's cool. Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skullabrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright is another one of our new members. Hey, Kathy. Kenneth Britt Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana. Uh-oh. I messed up. Hold on. Hold on, everybody. I messed up. I clicked the forward button. It's been really slow. I wasn't done. Paul Bankson. That's who I missed. Sorry, Paul. Now we went back and got you. And finally, Public Landowner. Again, I'm not sure that's a new member. I think that's someone who changed their name, and that's great. I want you guys to have the name. I said last week, and if you didn't see it, I posted on the Patreon page, if you want to change the name I call out, just go into your Patreon account and just change that little name where it identifies you, and that's what I'll see. Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Weagle87, and Brant Rumble and Chris, plus our one-time anonymous donors, we thank you all again. www.auwishbone.com. And now, and I don't, you know what I don't have, John, is I don't have a musical introduction yet for Jared's pick the guess the game. And
you need some game show music.
Yeah, I do. I need some game show. In fact, I'm going to make a note now. Hold on. This is important. I need music, game show music for Guess the Game. And I need Zeppelin. I'm going to add those two things to the soundboard. I'll take out stuff like probably King Tut. So let's a fond farewell to...
Now, when he was a young man.
All right, won't be hearing that one probably anymore. I did want to mention, by the way, that we do have new things coming all the time, and I'm currently putting together, for those interested, a Babylon 5 review podcast. So several other people and I are going to be watching the show over the next year and doing like every 2 weeks a review of like 3 or 4 episodes. We aim to cover the entire series in about a year. And my regular co-host will be Andy Fix, who I don't think has been on the network before. And then we'll have occasional guest appearances by Jared and by a couple of other folks that are interested as well. And so I think you guys will enjoy that. If you haven't watched the show, you can watch it along with us. And we'd like to hear your feedback. So, and if you have watched it, watch it again and we'll talk about it. It's on HBO Max now, as well as iTunes and Amazon and stuff. So, okay, here comes the Guess the Game segment. You ready to try to guess the game?
I'm very excited to be able to actually hear the Guess the Game this
yes!
week.
Yes! Progress! John actually gets to hear it this time. All right, here we... There we go. Ah, there it is. Here we go. Oh, he has music.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jarrett Albrick, a.k.a. Death Probe, with your next Guess the Game. I also have my husky post-comic book convention voice. You can see I've been talking all weekend. Anyways, I am at Yard Sale Artist on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If anyone out there has a play they would like me to use for Guess the Game. And with that, let's just get right into it. Good luck, Van and John.
This time they'll go from the shotgun. Triple wideouts left and one to the near side, the right. Waiting, taking the snap, looking with time. Throwing upfield, intercepted by the 40, 35 to 30, 25 to 20 to 15, to the 10, to the minus people to the 5, in the end zone, touchdown, Auburn! Broke a tackle and somehow kept his feet. At the 5, they had 2 men on him. Both of them hit him, and I don't see how he kept his balance, but he did. 41 yards for the touchdown. Hear the crowd.
Okay, there it is. Pretty exciting stuff. I hope you guys get it, and I'll see you in the hint file.
So it said 41 yards?
Yeah.
Interception return for a touchdown by Auburn.
Jim Fife. So pre-2003.
I mean, it's not LSU interception game.
That could have been Brian Robinson. It's kind of a long name.
Yeah.
I'm leaning toward 94 LSU Brian Robinson, although there are plenty of options. Mm-hmm. plenty to choose from that game.
Yeah, let's think if there's another. Is there a Tuberville game with a big interception return?
It would have had to have been 99-0-1-2 with Fife.
Okay.
Honestly, 99, the only times we won big games were when Ronnie Daniels did something.
Mm-hmm.
And 2000 was when Rudy Johnson did something. And 2001, honestly, I remember less about than most Auburn seasons. That year I remember going up and losing at Syracuse. That was away. And that awful LSU game. Oh, we did beat Florida, though, that year. 2002. We beat LSU at home and beat the snot out of them, but that was the year Ronnie Brown kind of exploded. I'm leaning toward the 94 LSU.
All right, let's go to the head file. I like that.
All right, we're planting our flag on, and I'm saying I think it was Brian Robinson, but we'll see. Here we go.
All right, you have elected to play the hint file, so let's get those bleeps out of there and listen to this play in its beautiful entirety.
This time they'll go from the shotgun. Triple wideouts left and one to the near side, the right. Howard waiting, taking the snap.
Jamie Howard.
Working with time. Throwing upfield, intercepted by Alvis at the 40.
Alvis.
Can Alvis.
Alvis to the 10. Still on his feet at the 5. Alvis in the end zone. Touchdown, Auburn! Broke a tackle and somehow kept his feet. At the 5, they had two men on him. Both of them hit him, and I don't see how he kept his balance, but he did. 41 yards for the touchdown. 23-15. Hear the crowd.
No way you didn't get it now. I bet you probably got it the first time, though. What do you got, Van and John?
All right. So, yeah, we had the right game in the right year. I guessed the wrong player, but that's fine. So let's see how Jared sums it up.
All right, Van and John, if you guess that this was Auburn versus LSU in 1994 for the magical interception game, then you are correct. I hope everyone enjoyed Guess the Game, and I'll catch you next time. I've been Jared Albrick, and once again, that's at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, if you have any suggestions for the next Guess the Game. War Eagle, everyone.
All right, so you guys, you've been challenged by Jared now to come up with some suggestions. Give him something really obscure. Let's be fair now. If it's before about 82, I'm not gonna have a clue, other than 1972, obviously.
No, but I pick a game again. It doesn't have to be a super famous game either.
Right.
But you can't pick like a. Whatever, some game against Kansas and some random third down play, whatever. We're not going to get that. So.
Bleep. Under center takes a snap. Hands to bleep. 1 yard gain. No, we're not going to. And those bleep defenders are really looking excited out there. They stopped bleep for 1 yard. No, that would not be cool. But yeah, way to go, Jared. This is awesome. We love it. All right. I think now.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Well, hopefully we do. What do we got, John?
All right. First question into the mailbag at auwishbone.gmail.com is from Auburn Elvis. And he says, after Alabama's exit from the men's tournament, I saw several Bama fans responding to Auburn taunts with comebacks that they're equivalents of, oh yeah, y'all are good at equestrian. And it struck me that the general Auburn fan reaction has been, yeah, so what? And this got me thinking about how non-marquee sports can rise up in the general fan consciousness when a team is really good, as Auburn Equestrian is, multiple national title winner. You guys are both years old. So do either of you remember and have thoughts of this type of fan acceptance for non-marquee sports back when women's basketball or swimming and diving had their national prominence?
I was just going to say swimming and diving. I was reading a very interesting email on a Auburn mailing list about this a couple of days ago, reminding us that we used to dominate at swimming and diving, and now we're absolutely terrible. And apparently this person was saying that our most recent hire, our current coach of swimming and diving, was a terrible mistake, and we don't have anybody, you know, that's really, you know, we used to fill the Olympics full of Auburn swimmers and divers. So I hope that they can get that back. In fact, and I thought this was very interesting, and it kind of made me sad, but they said, you know, right now, obviously the jury is out on Brian Harsin, but they were pointing out that with the baseball team the way it's doing and the softball team the way it's doing and swimming and diving the way it's doing, that right now it's hard not to argue that Alan Green is running Auburn sports into the ground. And I was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting to hear that.
Come on. That's a bunch of crap.
That's what I thought. But, I mean, it's true, though, that the last few hires in these sports have been drastic disappointments.
I mean, I think the baseball coaching hire is fine. I think that's silly. I don't agree with that at all. And again, he made the decision to pull the plug on the women's coach. That was the right decision. That he needed a new women's basketball coach. And so, You know, I don't buy that at all, honestly.
Well, good. I don't want to. I just was like, man, I hadn't thought of it that way. And that's
people are whatever. So, all right. I like the swimming and diving thing. There was a time when Auburn was really good at swimming and diving, and it became kind of a thing. And that's where we are, the equestrian. So,
yeah, they were winning national championships and everything for sure.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Jacob Fleming, a friend of the program. And he asked, hey, guys, if Auburn could have one permanent out-of-conference opponent in football, who would you want it to be? He says, I would want to reinstate the Georgia Tech game. Thanks for your time and have a great week.
I know who I wouldn't want it to be. They're orange and they're in South Carolina. They have a big white paw on their head. Just not even because they're good, just because I'm sick of them. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Georgia Tech thing would be cool. The problem there is we think we're so much better at football than them, and we should be, and yet the last time we beat them was 1987.
So we owe them.
Yeah, well, that's fair, but I mean, 03 and 05, I still am not. I still haven't gotten over that. Those two were tough to take. I was at both of those games, and I was there in Grant Field in 03, and I needed to be in the witness relocation program to get out of that stadium. That was an ugly scene when they won that game, man. Oh man. Oh boy, I don't even think about it. So yeah, I guess Tech would be cool. I mean, I always liked Florida State. That was a great series.
Auburn used to play Florida State every year. In the 80s basically, and I miss that.
But remember this though, you guys, you and Jacob thinking about this. If we added an out-of-conference team as a permanent opponent like we used to, we would play them like five times more often than other SEC teams. And at that point, why do you even have a conference?
So there was actually an announcement today that this was kind of deep reporting that somebody released, that the SEC is looking at future schedule models for football that will change the rotation system and stuff to make it much more frequent. And it's not going to happen next year. It's going to be several years from now. But they're working on a plan to go to either pods or some other kind of scheduling system where everybody plays each other much more frequently.
The pods, I don't – honestly, John, I don't know how anybody – you know, when you hear the pods, it sounds kind of dumb. It sounds like you're about to go do your laundry or something, or go somewhere on 2001 A Space Odyssey. But when you actually look at how the pod system works, I don't know how anybody in their right mind could not say this is better than what we have now.
That's right.
It's perfect. If you don't know, the pod just means you basically, instead of like 2 7-team divisions, you have divisions of like 3 or 4 teams. And that just lets you rotate everybody in and out. Basically, your pod is just your permanent opponents. Like we would have Alabama and Georgia or whatever. And then Mississippi State, then we would rotate everybody else. So one year we'd play like Missouri and South Carolina and Ole Miss, and one year we'd play like, you know, and you still get to play, you know, most of the same teams. You just cycle through those others a lot faster so that I'm not waiting 11 more years to see Auburn up here at Missouri again, which sucks.
Every player would get to play every team home and away during their college career.
Yeah, that would be awesome. It makes so much more sense than what we have now, which is so imbalanced. On top of everything else, in addition to not ever getting to play these teams where you might as well not even be in the conference, it's just so imbalanced because you look at our schedule and you look at schedule like Kentucky or something. You know, it's so completely out of whack. It's ridiculous. If it was a washing machine, it would be going out of balance. What else we got?
Van, bring in the sound effects tonight. We don't need the soundboard. So we have two kind of related questions. The first is from Rusty Owens, who says, not so much a question, but a public service announcement for Auburn fans. In light of last night's events, a tutorial on when not to roll tumors. And then Carl Von Drucker said, why was Skarbinski's post about the rolling of tumors for? Clicks or another blatant AL.com misinformation campaign?
Does he even work for them anymore?
There was some writing, basically people going online saying Auburn rolled tumors because Alabama lost, but in the reality it was because the equestrians won yesterday. So,
Well, there you go. We've cut through the baloney and gotten to the, in fact, as Marco said,
dispel once and for all with this fiction.
There you go. So the more you know.
The more you know.
Do-do-do.
So that's it for the questions. Thank you. If you have any more, send them to us next week.
There we go. And I guess our last stop, just to see if there's anything on that, down this little highway.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
And I say you.
Well, I guess the pods thing was kind of an SEC around the block. What else, if anything, do you know of going on in the SEC we need to talk about?
George Pickens' ACL injury.
Yeah, another ACL. Wow. That was big news earlier in the week. No kidding.
I mean, I never want to see anybody get hurt. No. I hope he goes on and has a great career, gets drafted, is very successful. But, you know, on the list of least favorite current college players, he's pretty near the top. So
yeah, that's true. He's the one that, for those that don't remember, that strung us along. He did the thing that it's usually players that switch to Alabama that do that to us. But he switched to Georgia at the last minute. So yeah, and then
he was the longest standing Auburn commitment. You know, he had been committed the longest of anyone in the class when he switched to Georgia.
Yeah, so to him. So there you go. Do we have any, as we wrap up here in our last few seconds, do we have any further thoughts or news or ideas about our AU Wishbone road game road trip? Anything you wish to share, or are we just in holding pattern?
I think Van and I need to talk offline, but I think one of the things that he and I were talking about is what we want to do is we want to develop kind of a survey or a plan for every single SEC road site. And we're obviously not going to visit them all this year or even next year, but we want to start thinking now about, okay, if we go to this site, what are the must-do things? What are the must-eat places? Is there a good barbecue place that Van and I would like? You know, is there some kind of pregame activity or thing that we must see or do? And that kind of thing. So that's, you know, is there some fun thing nearby or whatever? So that's our thing. Like, we want to think about, you know, and I'm going to start to develop kind of a way to record all this stuff. But if you have ideas or suggestions, if you've been to some of these road games, you're like, if you go to this one, and again, like people told us, hey, if you go to A&M, the pregame festivities are really cool with the Corps of Cadets and stuff. So if you go to, you know, a road game here or there, what is the thing that you really liked? It was worth doing when you were there. So.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, and then, you know, we've already had several people to say, like, you know, come on up to our location and we'll show you around or whatever. And that's awesome. We appreciate that for sure. And I continue with Amy and Mira to watch Men in Kilts to keep getting ideas. They were on last night's episode, they were on bicycles and they had little GoPro cameras mounted on the handlebars to show them while they're riding on bicycles, like trying to wreck each other and joking and everything. And I'm like, okay, so see, what we need to do is when we do it, we need to rig up cameras on everything so that we can document everything and then put it all together as a fine program. So I'm going to be thinking as we go forward on the best way to do the video and the audio so that we'll have good, we want to have good product come out of this. You know, we have to make sure everything is there's going to be a lot of editing going on, I think, after it's over with, but it should be a lot of fun. So, all right. Well, I guess that'll do it, right? Any last thoughts?
It's a nice day because Alabama lost.
It's always a nice day. It's always a nice day when Alabama loses. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
Reagan, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.